Now, News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Alain Belmar, former CEO of Bombardier, now with the Carlyle Group. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin, slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Susan Cain, author of Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking, and its follow-up, Quiet Power, The Secret Strengths of Introverts, and the co-founder of Quiet Revolution, a mission-based company that aims to unlock the potential introverts for the benefit of all, and someone I've had the pleasure of working with on my research on introverts, ambiverts, and extroverts. Thank you, Susan, for joining us today. Susan, what was it like starting your career as an introvert at a law firm which are known for being kind of shark-like, sort of the extrovert's kingdom, if you will?
Culture in some law firms is not really very shark-like at all. And the firm that I worked at was actually a very intellectual and collegial culture. Those are the first two. It was intellectual, collegial, and international. Those would be the first three words I would think of to describe it. So I was actually really happy there socially and culturally. And in fact, I think it's one of the reasons I stayed practicing as long as I did, even though it was the wrong path for me, just because it felt like such a good cultural fit in many surprising ways.
What was the highlight of your career in law on Wall Street?
I don't know. It's funny. I think because I really wasn't meant to be a lawyer, I'm not. The answers that are coming into my head about that question have very little to do with the substance of the practice and more to do with what I was talking about before, that I made a lot of close friends, loved the experience, and feel like those years have been invaluable to me for the rest of my life, because they gave me this, you know, kind of front row seat into how the financial engine of the world actually works in a way that I think you can't really understand just from reading these papers. You know, it's just different when you know the people and you're seeing what's happening every day.
What made you decide to leave law and go into writing? What was the epiphany, the moment, and why did you make that decision?
Well, there were two epiphany moments. One of them came halfway through my years of practicing law, when I came across a book called Do What You Are, which helps you figure out what your personality type is. It was the first time I think that was the first time that I thought about actually being an introvert, but also it shed light on other aspects of my personality too. And this book helped you figure out not only your type, but what would be the proper careers for that type. And that was a real epiphany, because for my type, the careers were all things like writer, psychologist, clergy person, social worker, like that, you know, that kind of constellation of ways of being. And I knew the second I saw that list that was truly me. It was so crystal clear. And it helped explain why I was pretty decent at being a lawyer, but it didn't feel right. So that was sort of epiphany number one. So I knew all that. It was kind of stewing around, but I didn't exactly know what to do with it. A few years later, I had a moment where, you know, I was coming up for partner, and a senior partner who I quite like and respect walked into my office and said that I wasn't going to be making partner. I still don't know. Did he mean ever? Did he mean that particular year? I don't know. All I know is I literally requested a leave of absence about an hour later, left the firm 3 hours after that, and never looked back. I never practiced law again. And I started writing literally that night. And what was amazing, I hadn't at that point written for over 10 years. I had kind of forgotten about the whole writing thing. But the minute I had space for it, that was what came.
We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of Quiet, the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking.
What did you write about that night?
Oh, that night is funny. I went to see the movie Legally Blonde. So this kind of, you know, sort of sets you in time. And I wrote a thought piece about Legally Blonde. I don't even know what the thought was. I can't quite remember. I just remember sitting down and doing it.
Well, you're not blonde either, as I recall.
No, but the movie had taken place at Harvard Law School where I had attended. So I remember just having a lot of thoughts about what they got right and what they didn't get right. Who knows? But then a few days later, I signed up for a class at NYU on creative nonfiction writing. And I guess that was epiphany number three, because I sat there in that class on the very first day and really felt like I had found my home and had zero expectation of ever making a living at doing that, but thought still that I should organize my life around writing and just figure out some other way to make and, you know, to pay the rent in the meantime. But I knew that writing was going to be my center.
You're in your 30s at this point. We're entirely jealous that you could walk away from a high-paying job as a lawyer and just become a writer. But I guess at that point, you know, your husband brought money into the family as well, so you had a bit of slack.
No, I was not married at that time.
Oh.
I was on my own. And I actually, I mean, well, that's a whole other story. But at the same time that I left law, I also left a very long-term relationship. So it was quite a moment of huge upheaval, you know. And also, I really wanted kids, which I now have. But at the time, you know, when I made that decision, I thought it might mean not having children too, which was something scary for me. But I felt the right path. I had some degree of savings from having, you know, had a high paying job for those years. But that was not going to carry me through for that long. So my strategy was that I just figured out different ways of making ends meet in a freelance kind of way. So I started like a little consultancy where I was teaching people negotiation skills, and sometimes I would teach it out of my apartment, and sometimes I would go into a company and do a workshop here and there. And that paid the bills. And my advice is you are going to hear, or we all hear, so many stories in this culture of like, you know, if you have a creative desire, then you should be following that and be willing to take any risk for the love of your art. And I think that's terrible advice, because number one, we really do all have to pay the rent and take care of people, the people in our lives. But also it's terrible for your creative impulse to be financially stressed. Like you should not, you're just going to do much better if you can take that worry off the table. So I have a kind of pragmatic approach to these big risks.
Your parents must have been so, so nervous.
Oh my God, it's funny that you say that. Yeah, my mom kept saying, you're in free fall. That was the expression she kept using. And in fact, the first significant piece of writing that I did was a memoir called Free Fall. And I wrote it in prose form and I wrote it in poetry form. And it was basically a memoir of leaving the wrong career and the wrong relationship kind of all at the same time, what that was like. And I ended up deciding never to publish it, but it was kind of what got me going as a writer.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Cain, author of the best-selling book, Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking.
How long were you writing before you started up on Quiet? Like, was it months, a year later, or was it fairly quick that you got into Quiet?
No, it was a few years, I think, because, let's see, I know I left law right before 9/11, so that was 2001. And I put the Quiet proposal together in 2005. So yeah, it was a good 4 years. And during that time, I was writing, as I say, everything. I was writing memoirs and poetry, and I took a playwriting workshop and wrote a play. I did lots of stuff, and I don't know. Somehow, I was never going to publish any of that. And then Quiet came along, and I thought of it at the time as a very quirky and idiosyncratic project that not that many people would be interested in, but still, I thought, I'm going to try to publish this.
We're speaking with Susan Cain, author of two books on introversion, the co-founder of a firm that promotes the strengths that introverts can contribute to society. Up next, we'll talk about her writing approaches and techniques. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of two books on introversion and the co-founder of Quiet Revolution, an organization that aims to tap into the benefits of introversion. What's your discipline of writing? Like, do you sit down and write? My colleague Henry Mintzberg writes every morning, and we don't bug him, we don't phone him, because he's writing. Take us inside the life of a writer.
Well, I think every writer's life is so different from all the writers that I know, but my process is, well, I mean, it's partly, my process is dictated partly by the exigencies of my life, which is I am raising kids at the same time. So I drop my kids off at school every morning at around 8. I go and I exercise first thing, and then I go to a cafe and write for as many hours as I'm able to keep thinking straight. And for me, I love working in cafes. It's just my happy spot, you know, whereas other writers will tell you that they have to be totally alone and in total silence.
As an introvert, like, I go to coffee shops as an extrovert because I draw on the energy. And I actually sometimes talk to people, but you probably draw on the energy, but you're not talking to people where you're in your own head as an introvert to a large degree.
Yeah, that's right. I so much draw on the energy. And in fact, I had lived in Manhattan for 17 years and I loved living there also because of that feeling that you just walk down the streets and pick up all the energy around you. You know, I'm really, by nature, very porous to whatever is happening around me. There's just this feeling of having all that energy around you, but also having the social freedom to just go inside your own mind and focus on what's in the screen in front of you, that to me is just the perfect balance.
Do the words pour out to a certain degree once you get going? Like, do they just come to your mind and they go on the screen and you just keep writing? Or is it a more editing process and a back and forth? How does it work for you?
It's both. So when I'm doing the first draft of whatever riff it is, then they do pour out. And those are always the most amazing, pleasurable moments of the whole thing. I always say I write like a Zamboni machine cleaning the ice, you know, after an ice hockey game or figure skating. By which I mean, like, I get this glorious riff out there and then I go over it a million times and circle and circle and circle until it's all polished. And I do that for the entire manuscript too. So I'm like constantly rearranging sentences, but also rearranging, you know, which chapter, like, I'll take an anecdote or a study or whatever, and I'm constantly rethinking which chapter it belongs in and rewriting the transitions until I feel like it's just right.
We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of Quiet, the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. So then you send it off to the editor, but it's pretty polished. But how much does the editor edit it?
That also really varies depending on the editor and the writer. So like in the book that I'm working on right now, I had a million thoughts and I couldn't figure out how to organize them exactly. So I actually started by sending her an outline that was probably like 75 pages or something crazy. And then we just met for lunch for a couple hours and she gave me her high level thoughts on it. And just that 1 2-hour lunch completely helped. It just shed light because it kind of cut through. She was able to very clearly see, all right, all this, you know, half of what you wrote is for another book. Don't even think about it in this book. You know, or here's where you're going totally wrong in this section. So, you know, that's one part of the editing process. But then another part is sending the chapters and, you know, you get more deep into the nitty gritty of what idea works or what sentence works. But I should say also, even before I get to that stage, I actually send my literary agent all my drafts, and he's amazing. He's brutally honest always. So he completely tells me when something's not working. And then when something is, I know that I can really trust him. So he's kind of my first line of defense.
The book you're working on, what's it on?
It's about the state of longing, and it's about living in a world that includes both joy and sorrow and how to make sense of that.
So sounds a bit philosophical.
Yeah, I would say it is philosophical, but, you know, I try to kind of ground it in everyday situations.
What number book is this?
This is the third.
So it takes you months, couple years to write a book?
Longer. It takes me more like 4 or 5 years to write a book, I would say. And I don't know, maybe that would be different if I weren't raising my kids. And I still do a ton of speaking on quiet, you know, and working with introverts and companies. Maybe I'd be a little faster if not for that, or maybe not. I really like my ideas to marinate for a long time before I make sure they're worth sharing.
So your TED Talk is one of the most watched ever. How many times did you go over your TED Talk before you actually presented? I hear that you do it a lot, from other people tell me. But what was your experience with the TED Talk?
Yeah, I did go over it a gazillion times. And I probably did it even more than your typical TED speaker, because these days I'm not a especially nervous speaker. But back then I was. I wasn't used to public speaking at that time. So in addition to just getting the talk right, I was also dealing with major public speaking anxiety. So I spent, well, first I spent a long time writing it, but also I spent the week before the talk working intensively with a kind of speech/drama coach, you know, sort of morning till night for an entire week.
So introverts can be great public speakers. You know, in your better moments, you're an excellent public speaker, but how, as an introvert, did you grow and become more comfortable in front of a large audience?
It was a combination of things. You know, partly it's just doing it. There's just no substitute for just doing it. But also feeling fueled by sharing something that I actually really care about is, that's an incredible elixir, you know. But for anybody who's listening, who's still kind of dealing with the fear of the stage, and the studies say that's half the population that feels that way. I'm a huge believer in things like a Toastmasters or any kind of setting that you can put yourself in where you get to practice speaking all the time, you know, really frequently. But you want to start not by giving a TED talk. You want to start with really small doses in situations where the stakes are low, and it doesn't matter if you screw up and if you are visibly nervous, everybody's just supportive when you go to a Toastmasters meeting. That's where you want to practice. And, you know, you can kind of do that over and over and over again. And the fear really does dissipate. And as it melts away, you also start becoming more polished.
So what is Quiet Revolution? You started that a while ago. What is it up to?
We're now mostly focused on the web. I'd always had this vision of like Quiet Revolution would be taken up by everyone and percolate at companies all over the world and at schools and so on. So our role right now is as an online platform to distribute ideas to people who need them and then who can take them into their companies, into their schools, into their own lives.
A couple of things that strike me is that in organizations, certain professions tend to get more introverts or extroverts. So if you look at a lot of professors are introverts because you spend a lot of time by yourself. IT may be more introverted, accounting, but then marketing traditionally before big data was more extrovert in sales. So do you see any kind of some trends like that where introverts or extroverts are drawn to certain professions?
I definitely do. And I actually see it based on the companies who invite me in to speak. Like, you know, I'm often invited by pharmaceutical companies. The financial industry these days has lots of introverts, so lots of finance, lots of technology, as you say. Many of the creative companies, there's a really interesting dichotomy where you have the executive roles being filled by extroverts who set a very extroverted culture for the company. But the people who are actually doing the creative work.
We're speaking with Susan Cain, author of two hugely successful books on introversion and the co-founder of a mission-based company that promotes introvert strengths, and someone I've had the pleasure of working with as well. Up next, we'll be talking about leadership, especially as it relates to introversion and extroversion. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of two books on introversion and the co-founder of Quiet Revolution, an organization that aims to tap into the benefits of introversion. The other thing is cultural. I lived in England 5 years, the U.S. 6 years, Canada most of my life. And when I go to the U.K., I become a bit more introverted, a bit more quiet. And when I go to the U.S., people might not believe this, but I get noisier. Though in the U.S., it might depend whether I'm in New York or L.A. or in Ohio. Do you see kind of a national culture that some are a bit more extroverted, some are a bit more introverted?
Oh, I absolutely see cultural differences. And I was in Finland not that long ago, not so far away. And that too is a quite introverted culture. And then you also see in many Confucian-based societies, there's more of a tendency to introversion because there's, you know, in those cultures, the idea that words are dangerous and threatening to group harmony. So the person who can hold their tongue and not talk too much is seen as having an inner strength. So it's a completely different outlook. But the interesting thing is, having said that these differences are there and they're real. But, you know, like my book, Quiet, it was translated into 45 languages. And when I talk to people from even the countries that are visibly more introverted, you know, a Finland, a Korea, let's say, still the reaction to the idea of there being an extrovert ideal that introverts are pressed to conform to everyone's disadvantage, you know, to the society's disadvantage, that idea resonates no matter where you go. So I think that what's happening in a country like a Finland or a Korea is that there's a kind of double consciousness right now where, you know, there might be certain cultural imperatives to be more introverted, but there's also a global imperative to be more extroverted, and people are feeling them both.
Can I tell you the one introvert joke I know?
Yeah, sure.
So my mother's Finnish, so I've been to Finland many times. And how do you tell a Finnish introvert from a Finnish extrovert? A Finnish introvert looks at his shoes when he's talking to you. A Finnish extrovert looks at your shoes.
I had a feeling that was going to be the joke because I heard the exact same one.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Cain, author of the best-selling book, Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. So how should leaders manage introverts? So I have some introverts working for me. I have one with me now. What's your advice about being more effective and getting the most out of introverts in the best sense of the word?
Well, I'd really even take a step back from the question and ask, well, what's the best way to get the most from each other, right? I would say within any team or working group, there should be a discussion about these temperamental differences. Not like how can the extroverts help the introverts, but how can we all help and understand each other? What do each of us need to work at our best? And you're going to find maybe, you know, one person, maybe the extrovert needs pretty frequent check-ins throughout the day and wanting feedback, wanting to connect with employees. And if they're not getting that a few times a day, they're not happy. They feel listless. Maybe the introvert will tell you that what they need is a few hours a day where they get to go into a state of deep flow and really focus and know that they're not going to be interrupted. But I think the first step really is having those conversations and getting this to the place where it's no big deal to talk about these things. You know, it's just accepted and understood that, of course, we have these differences. But another thing leaders should be thinking about is when you go into meetings. We know there's that statistic out of the Kellogg School that in your typical meeting, three people doing 70% of the talking. So that's terrible for everybody, right? Because we want everyone's ideas. So what do you do about it? Well, if you know there's someone who has good ideas to share and tends to be more reticent, maybe you approach them before the meeting and say, hey, you know, Tom, I know you tend to have a lot of interesting thoughts about such and such topic. Mind if I look to you when we get to that topic? You know, and that can be one way. Or trying to use techniques where maybe you go around the room to get everybody's ideas, or you do brainwriting where everybody writes their ideas down on a piece of paper and then you put the post-its at the front of the room for everyone to see. But whatever technique you use, basically to to be hyper aware that the dynamic tends to be that in any meeting, we follow the ideas of the most senior people, the most dominant people, the most talkative people, the most charismatic people, when there's no correlation between any of those characteristics and necessarily having the better ideas.
We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of Quiet, the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. In my research, I've interviewed about 300 C-suite executives. And so the title of my book that's coming out from Stanford is We're All Ambiverts Now. The idea that if you're an extrovert, you've got to be quiet and act like an introvert on occasion. And if you're an introvert, you need to give an inspiring speech as in a leader, as an executive, but recognize your hard wiring and take introvert breaks, and or I take extrovert breaks. So that's the idea of ambiverts. Do you see that you can act like an extrovert, but it's just from time, like you can't do it all the time or you just wear yourself out?
There's a huge difference between acting more extroverted because you feel that there's something wrong with your way of acting, so you're going to try to be more like that person over there, versus saying, here's an important goal that I have, and in the service of that goal, I'm going to sometimes step outside my comfort zone, but then I'm going to go recharge as soon as I'm done. I don't know if you wrote in your book about Brian Little and his free trait theory. So he's got a really interesting way of looking at this idea. He basically says that it's important for all of us to figure out what our core personal projects are. And those can be work projects. They could be the people in your personal life to whom you're most devoted. It could be a cause. And in the service of those personal projects, it's worth stepping outside your comfort zone. And he would call it exercising free traits as opposed to sticking only with your fixed traits. But to know that when you do that, it's important afterwards, he would say, to find a restorative niche. Like he gives his own example. He's a strong introvert and also one of the best and funniest speakers I've ever heard. And he always says as soon as he's done speaking, he will like run to the nearest restroom because he needs to be quiet and not, plow forward into the sea of admirers who all want to ask him questions. So that's his restorative niche.
The other book I just finished is on Millennials and Z. So I can't help but ask, do you see that Generation Z, like 25 and under, you see kind of a different approach to introversion and extroversion than the boomers and the Xers like you and I would have?
I don't know. I mean, I sort of see it going both ways because the younger generations for sure have been raised with more group work in their educational systems, for better and for worse. There might be some extra degree of comfort for that generation, but there's a degree to which the preference for being introverted and extroverted is just hardwired. And so there's a way in which it doesn't vary. It's almost like what we were talking about with global cultures, it's like there's who you are, and then there's some other cultural imperative, and they kind of work in tandem.
So your second book is about introversion in children. Why that particular interest?
I can't tell you how many letters I get from people. Well, I get them from kids. I get them from parents. I get them from teachers. And I get them from 70-year-olds who tell me that if only they had understood these ideas when they were younger, that their whole lives could have turned out differently. Because kids are so frequently sent the message that there is something wrong with being quiet or shy or introspective or reflective or whatever. So, a lot of these kids grow up with an idea that there's something wrong with their way of being.
We're speaking with Susan Cain, a leading thinker on introverts and how to optimize their skills for the success of all. Coming up, we'll be talking about finding harmony in one's relationship as an introvert. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of two books on introversion and the co-founder of Quiet Revolution, an organization that aims to tap into the benefits of introversion. Your husband and kids, are they all introverts, or there is an extrovert in there as well?
My husband is actually quite extroverted. although he's an extrovert who can happily spend quite a bit of time by himself, but you know, whatever room he's in, you feel his presence in a very strong way.
It strikes me as that a lot of couples, it's an introvert marries an extrovert. Now, there's lots of many exceptions, but it's probably more that you marry the opposite. Is that an observation you've made as well?
Yes, it is. And the last time I checked the data on this, which was a while ago, it showed that it was about half and half, that half the couples were mating assortatively and half the couples were marrying their opposites. But observationally, I completely agree with you. There seem to be many more introvert-extrovert couples.
Well, as an extrovert, if I married an extrovert, I think we'd just drive each other wild after a while. Always want to be the center of attention. Where two introverts, just you're both quiet, so that's fine. But it kind of, you know, it balances if you have the opposite.
Yeah, I actually have a whole chapter of quiet on this phenomenon because I believe there are pros and cons to both ways of doing it. You know, like you get two introverts together and they obviously understand each other, but there can be a feeling of like longing for somebody to sort of infuse the energy that extroverts can bring. And then when you have introvert extrovert couples, there's this fantastic yin and yang that happens. But the downside that I saw a lot in my research was that these couples sometimes get into trouble just about how often to socialize. You know, like if one person's idea of Friday night is inviting all your friends over for dinner and the other person really wants to cozily watch Netflix on the sofa and you repeat that drama Friday night after Friday night, that can get tricky after a while.
We're speaking today with Susan Cain, author of Quiet, the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. So I have a question here. Rachel Seo is one of my great undergraduate students, is going to be starting at BCG shortly. She had a couple questions for you.
I'm currently in my last year, final year of my undergraduate degree, and I'm starting work in management consulting at BCG. And I wanted to know what advice you would have for an introverted woman starting her career in business especially.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, and there's so much to say, I'll give you two pieces of advice. One is to look for an area of expertise that you can cultivate, which is great advice really for anybody, not just for introverts. You know, try to develop an area of expertise as you go along in your career. And then think of ways to share that expertise with other people so that instead of having to think about self-promotion, which often feels really unappealing to introverts and not our best skill set, you can think instead of, well, how can I share what I know? And, you know, maybe you start writing about what you know, or you might get to the point where you feel comfortable, and I hope you do, speaking on stage about what you know. And those kinds of public displays just oddly have such a disproportionate bang for the buck. You could spend 1,000 hours toiling silently at your desk and one 15-minute presentation will do more for your career. Like, it shouldn't be that way, but it is. So that's just kind of a reality. Another smaller thing you can do is when you go into meetings, think beforehand about what you might want to say or what question you might want to ask or whatever, and give yourself a push to speak up early, because the ideas that get advanced early tend to get listened to, but more important, you'll start to feel kind of more in the center emotionally of the room, and you'll probably just feel more grounded from there. So it'll require a push because you're going to have this moment, I know, in the future where you'll be sitting in a meeting and maybe you'll think of this conversation and be like, no, I just can't do it. But try to give yourself that push.
How were you able to show your best self, or how were you able to be very real as an introvert in a society that's very much built for extroverts?
I believe that when you're speaking to other people out of a sense of conviction and truth, that what you say communicates itself and people will listen. And you'll listen to them and so on. And so when you're really speaking from that deeper place, it doesn't matter as much how loudly you're speaking and how tall you are and what gender you are and all these kinds of things. Not that those things don't matter, but they don't matter as much. So the real habit, it's almost an emotional habit to cultivate, of learning to speak from a place of conviction. That's really what's going to give you your authority and your confidence.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Susan Cain, author of the best-selling book, Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. Susan, what kind of introvert breaks do you take?
It's funny because I was going to say these days in my life, I don't need them so much because I spend so much time writing. But then I'm thinking about all the days that I spend sort of speaking and traveling and like that. So what do? I take walks. I take a lot of walks. And for me, I guess, as we said before, you know, my favorite thing is sitting with a latte in a cafe by myself. So I build that into my day every single day without fail, always, except for now with coronavirus. And I also do a lot of yoga and play a lot of tennis.
So I'm here speaking with Marie, my producer. We had a couple of minutes left over, and we thought we'd kind of update you on what my research has been going and get some of Marie's thought, having heard a lot of these conversations. It was great to talk to Susan, Marie. I think it's the second or maybe even the third time I've sat down with Susan Cain over the last 5 or 6 years on this show. Susan inspired me. I wrote a Forbes blog of her book, Quiet. Someone had sent it to me. And one of my undergraduate students, I wrote a Forbes blog about it, and it got over 60,000 views. So I normally get around 5,000 or 6,000. So it's 10 times normal. It really resonated with people. So the next night in our CEO series class, which is what this radio show came from at McGill MBA, Claude Mongeau, McGill MBA, was the CEO of CN at the time, about 24,000 people. So a big company. I had never asked anyone before. I said, Claude, are you an introvert or more of an extrovert? And he went in on for about 10 minutes in a quiet way about he's an introvert. The second CEO was an introvert. And so this is contrary to what the literature had said, which had said mainly leaders are extroverts, but it was based on our sense rather than research. So that's led me to interview on my radio show in the CEO class. This is based on just talking to executives, interviewing them for the book, but I'm doing a book for Stanford called We're All Ambiverts Now, or at least that's the working title. Publishers tend to like to change the titles, but the essential thought is the word ambivert came to my attention about 5 years ago. It had been invented in Toronto by a Canadian, so in the 20s, so we can be very proud as Canadians about that. And it really had dropped out of the literature until Adam Grant, who's a rock star professor that I've interviewed down in Wharton, looked at salespeople, some colleagues, and found out that ambiverts were better salespeople because they could act introverted and be good listeners and then act extroverted and sell a product. So he brought the term back, and it's something I've been talking to a lot of people about. So my conclusion is that about 40% of people are introverts, 40% are genuinely extroverts, and about 20% of people are genuinely ambiverts. But what I'm arguing based on hundreds of conversations on this show and other places as well is that to be a senior leader, you got to act like an introvert at times and an extrovert at other times. So Marie, you've been involved in these conversations now for a couple of years. What has struck you about this idea of ambiverts, introverts, and extroverts?
It's really interesting to think about the fact that it actually is not these very cut and dry categories, and that it really exists on a spectrum, and that people can move from one end of the spectrum to another according to their circumstances. And what's been really interesting recently is seeing how that spectrum affects people during the pandemic and during the lockdowns, of people who might consider themselves more introverted, or they might consider themselves to be ambivert, actually find that maybe they're a lot more extrovert, and that they realize, and that even people who are introverted are still dependent in some form of physical and social contact. We spoke with Susan, who early on at the beginning of the pandemic said that she wasn't able to go work in cafes anymore and get that contact from people and that energy from people that even she as an introvert feels that she really needs. So it's been really interesting to see how these things change and are actually not solid ideas in the way that we think about them.
This is the CEO Series. The show was produced by Marie LeBrosse. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campana. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.